Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the First Head.
And I'm Dane, the Inquisitor Head.
We'll see.
Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games,
where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. What about this time?
This time, I am going to ask a question, and we are going to answer it. And that question is... Are perception checks really necessary?
Should they be there at all?
Yeah. Because if you remember from our previous episode in Fighting Fantasy, I had a thing to talk about, and I can't remember. I should have gone back and listened to that episode to see how much
we had a lot of ideas in that episode, and then we've struggled to remember
them. I can't remember if we
them.
Had time... Because, like, originally we're just like, oh, this is going to be a throwaway episode. And then it was really rich, but we were at a barbecue at your parents' house, and we had to go.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe we should start with a little bit of rehashing the Fighting Fantasy book.
Okay.
And where I started thinking about this. So if you haven't heard of Fighting Fantasy, go listen to our previous episode.
Mm-hmm. You and then go, like, it. Find the books.
Yeah.
You can find them, like, at used paperback stores and stuff, but they're also, like, I think being reprinted, because I think there's maybe some new ones coming out, or some new ones came out in recent years or something. And it's... We didn't, like, wholeheartedly endorse it as a concept. We identified some issues with Fighting Fantasy not being as fun as it could be, but it is a cool idea, so... Worth checking them out, and if you don't want to check them out, the podcast we did about them is free, so you can check that out for free.
Yeah, so go check that out, go check them out, or whatever, or don't, you know, follow your own arrow, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
however that song goes. So, in these books... There is no such thing as a perception check.
Yeah.
Right? There is either do the action or don't do the action.
Right.
For example, oh, a goblin dropped a little jar of something. What do you do? Do you A, lick it, B, test it with a piece of cloth, or C, don't pick it up at all? There is no, well, what more can I find out about this liquid by rolling?
Right.
It tells you what you see, and then you have to make a decision based on that, right? And the obvious answer in that scenario is
test it
with a piece of cloth.
Test it with something if, like, it gives you that option.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you've already, like, done a thing and you know that, like, oh, the goblin has the thing, and if I drink it in this context, whatever, the good thing will happen.
Well, it doesn't, because, spoiler, it's acid and it kills you.
Because
dead. What it, and, like, you know, so that one just blew my mind, where it was like, why would you ever just eat something? Because, right? But then, oh wait, I've done that as a character before.
Mm-hmm.
And also later on in the books, or earlier in the book too, there's, like, you know, there's these instances of drink it or don't drink it. And, like, could I smell it? Could I, you know, anyways. So I'm like, that's an interesting concept, right? Thinking about role-playing games as, like, a simulation, right? We've talked about that before. And the game master is spinning the story, describing things, setting up the scene, and the players are not in the game master's head. So when the game master says, oh yeah, a goblin was carrying a jar of liquid, each player could be imagining a different jar, a different color of liquid, a different viscosity, right? So that's interesting, right? That is kind of, I think, that makes sense. Do a perception check for that. But hang on. Because rolling for that is stupid. Because your players have eyes.
Yeah.
Your players have senses. Your player characters, I mean. your players in real life as well. But those senses are mainly useless because
they're not in that world.
Right. You can't really smell the jar of liquid unless your game master has like candles and is like, this is what it smells like.
Yeah, this
like.
One. Here's a little 4D immersion prop that, you know, whatever. Yeah, the like hyper specifics of what you described to the players are not, you know, they're a little bit up for interpretation, but there are things that just like
should twist offs.
Not what. Yeah.
Twist offs.
Yeah, they
used an opener for mine. Anyways.
That like they shouldn't have to ask for. Mm-hmm. Essentially what you're positing here is that there's not really a lot of real need for the like, well, make a perception check. There's not a lot of need for that if you as a game master do a proper job describing things.
And not even that.
And then, like,
I'm
players...
I'm saying don't hide that information behind
right.
a paywall.
Not...
And by paywall, I mean a roll.
A roll. Because, yeah, like, regardless perception check... Because, so, like, you could adjudicate that a couple of ways. Like, say it wasn't in a book form. It wasn't in a choose-your-own-adventure book. It was regular adventure. And I was running it, and I was like, oh, you hit this... the goblin runs away, and he drops something. And it's a, you know, it's a little jar of... whatever. And someone's like, ooh, I drink it. And someone else is like, wait, hang on. Let's not drink it yet.
Let's make sure it's not acid.
Yeah. Can I do a perception on it to it's a goblin. You know, figure out what it is and is it safe? And we're like, you don't need to do a perception. Mm-hmm. You just like narrate the test thing. Like drop a couple drops on the floor or like touch a piece of cloth to it and see if it does anything to it. And like narrate in that exchange... what would otherwise be the results of a perception check, I guess?
Well, like, yeah. So I think in general, maybe not everybody's doing this, but I think our surrounding players and game masters in our circles rely too heavily on dice rolls for perception stuff. I think it's kind of just a habit we fell into because... that's like how it seems like in the books or like, and like, cause not even the, well, maybe I would say maybe we learned it from watching, you know, other, you know, media about it. But like, I mean, I'm trying to think, you know, now that I've consumed a decent amount of D20, I don't think like Brendan does that.
Well, so I was actually, when you first brought this up, I was thinking about Dimension 20, because I was doing Cloudward Ho, which is a really cool campaign, and begins in a really exciting way, like the beginning of a novel that I would be so stoked to be reading, but it's, you know, it's not a novel, it's professional players making it funny all the time. But there is this sort of like ritual that they go through constantly, and it's almost like, well, we're playing a game, so we do it this way, where someone in character will be like saying something or about to do something, and then they check themselves because they're doing a good job role playing, right? But they want to check with Brennan, like, well, hang on, what does my character know about that, or like what do I see that would like give me any sort of context? And they go through this ritual of. Then Brennan Lee Mulligan asks for, give me an investigation, or give me a history check, or give me a perception roll. Give me something. And then they go through that. But what I noticed going through Cloudward Ho was that because Brennan came up with this world, and I assume with some collaboration from the players as far as their characters go, because all the characters have very rich backstories that are tied into the history and the like fictional geography of the setting, they probably had some hand in it, but Brennan obviously came up with most of it. And it seemed to me like, kind of regardless of what the role came up as, he would tell them the information that they needed to continue role playing in character. And that, I think, serves to illustrate your point, is that the like the little like ritual dance of going through a perception check or an investigation check, unless there is, you know, something not necessary hidden behind the role that like you could continue not knowing something, and that's part of the adventure, that's part of like the situation. Most of the time it seems like, well, we have to do this stupid little ritual in order for the game master to feel like it's okay to tell you more about the situation, to give you more context for the situation, because then you're playing a game together as opposed to the game master just spewing lore at you.
Yeah, well, I think asking a question though is playing the game as well.
That is in support of your position. Mm-hmm. I feel like is, you know, asking the straight up question is like, well, hang on, that's a reference that myself doesn't know, but would my character know that?
My character?
And then good game master ought to be like, yeah, I think you would know that, you know, that refers to like this thing in this country of the fictional world that happened this amount of time ago. Do with that what you will, put that into the context of how your character feels about things, but yes, you would know this about it, and, you know, kind of just give it to them.
Yeah.
That's what it seemed like. It seemed like regardless of how high or low the rolls turned out, and Cloudward Ho seemed statted out deliberately so that everyone was rolling fairly high, but it seemed like the role didn't matter that much. You'd go through the little ritual, give me a whatever check. My result is this. Okay, now Brennan is allowed to dump a little lore on you.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I don't like the idea anymore of like game master, tell me, like, does it look like, I don't know, the monkey demon could have fit through that hole? I'm not going to make you roll for that ever. Yeah. I'm just going to be like, yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. Or, no, it doesn't. It's too small. Whatever I had, like, either decided, like, ahead, to make the story go forward, or whatever is, like, best and most dramatic in the moment. Because I think, you know, you can also take in the core of, like, the Borg hack, you know, philosophy of like, wait, not the Borg hack, the mothership, you know, only roll when it's like, you know, dramatic and like the outcome is uncertain and like there's a time pressure or tools pressure or like somebody's fighting against you, right? So like in ambush, I would say, okay, that's a perception check, right? If your players are walking in the ambush. But here's one. If your players are like, we're walking through the woods at night, we're looking out for an ambush.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'd make a roll a perception check anymore.
I like getting away from that in general. I like, you know, you describe to me how you're doing this. Mm-hmm. And then based on, you know, because what I'd rather train my players to do instead of, you know, can I make an investigation? Can I make a perception? You know, what I'd rather them be, the habit I'd rather like form in players is just like, you tell me how you're approaching this situation. And that now changes how I describe it. Like in the instance of Goblin drops a mysterious bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're like, well, I want to check it out. I don't need a lot more than that. And you're like, yeah, I want to see what it is before I, well then like, we don't need to go through this gamified song and dance of, did you roll high enough?
Because what happens when you fail that roll?
With like, well, if it smelled like acid, I wouldn't have put it in my mouth.
Right.
You know, if it smelled like something, a caustic chemical, I think caustic and acidic are different, but whatever. You know, then, like, obviously this person who is ostensibly in real life in this fantasy setting wouldn't have done that. And there is a little bit of, like, you know, humor can come from things where, like, the dice and your attributes can create the narrative of a character who's almost, like, too stupid to survive or just makes a stupid mistake in a situation. And I think like humor and comedy can come from that, but at the expense of the like immersion, the verisimilitude of these are characters who actually live in this world and would treat situations in this world as if they were real.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, because like there's nothing, I think, there's nothing as frustrating as like asking a question, wanting just a simple little bit more description, or like a just like I'm trying to get immersed, you know, I'm asking a question, it's like, oh, what does the rock face look like? Does it look climbable? Give me a roll for it. Oh, you rolled a nat one. A rock, what, tumbles down and falls on my head while I look up? Funny.
Right.
But also, like...
But, like, is that a place for the dice to decide?
Yeah.
And like, I guess, the uncertain outcome there? There is, I guess, and I know it's sort of my job in this episode to play against you in this situation. But generally speaking, I agree with you.
Okay. Because I got other sorts of perception and, like, investigation checks that we can go through. So I think the description of, like, seeing what the character sees... I think we're on board on that.
Yeah, that should almost probably never be tied to a role. And it's just a muscle you're going to have to exercise as a game master to have your descriptions carry the needful information.
Mm.
And then also a muscle for your players that they're going to have to learn to flex to, you know, treat the situation as if it were real and... You know, ask questions like, ask the question not in the context of like, can I roll for this, but what does my character see or know about this?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I was gonna say is, I think there is a style of game mastering where you don't know ahead of time, and you might.
Yeah.
Enjoy relying on dice rolls in that situation to
help you out.
Yeah, to help like fill in the blanks of your story because you didn't think about everything, because it's impossible to think of everything. And so you deliberately, because you know yourself, kind of back off on some of that stuff and then wait until, you know, you're unsure about something and then leave that up to a dice roll. It's just like, it's not my style. I generally like to know what everything is that I put in there. Right. And
so I think I'm hearing you, right? So this example could be illustrated by, you're the game master describing your players. They're walking through a forest and to give life to the forest, you say like a deer or a boar, some sort of game jumps out onto the path and then runs away into the woods, right? Your players are there for like the troll at the end of the path, but your players are like, actually, you know what? It's been a long time since my, you know, quote character ate, even though, right, we've never used that mechanic. We've never like, used rations, you know what? Before.
Now we've decided
but you we're accidentally hungry. Put a fucking shiny boar in front of me.
Yeah. And so now they've decided actually we're gonna chase it. We need to make a little side quest out of this. And so now are like, okay, now I might be like, someone give me an investigation perception to be able to track, or give me a survival you know. Now I might put some rolls in front of you to like, because I didn't know, I thought that boar was just gonna disappear off screen. Like, you know, someone dancing across a stage and now they're backstage changing into another costume for the next scene. Mm-hmm. But they've decided that the scene actually follows that. And so now I'm not sure what it does.
Mm-hmm.
And it would, you know, that's a situation where like, oh shit, I'm not sure where this goes actually. Sure. Let me get some rolls out of you guys. And based on successes and failures... But, you know, that goes into just specifically why I don't like D&D, because then you have to assign difficulty first. They're like, okay, well, we want to track this thing. I'm like, all right, well, so there's a couple different roles you can make to do that. And now I have to assign difficulty for it. So what am I going to do? Like, do I go in the monster manual all the way to beasts and figure out, like, which one of these values is a good thing for you to roll against? Or do I just, like,
wing it?
Or, you know, and in general, I like game systems where there is only one, you know, a flat fixed difficulty rating for everything so that you don't have to do that. But, you know, the problem still exists.
Yeah. And so I think this is one of those lessons we can learn from Fighting Fantasy, where it's so, like, I feel like there's two things there. One, the role is just there to give the game master some time to think, which is perfectly acceptable, right? But you can also just say, oh, I wasn't expecting you guys to take an interest in the boar. Let me think for a second.
I actually think, I mean, and this is me, and I already said there's, you know, different styles of game mastering. This might work better for some people, worse for others. But I think it's more difficult to, say you've accidentally put yourself in this situation where now you have to improvise some information, some more information to present to your players. I think it's harder to do that on a sliding scale based on how good or bad a dice roll is when I already didn't know what this was going to be ahead of time, you know? If I ask for a perception roll in that situation, like, oh, I rolled an 8. Well, it's not an utter failure. Does that mean, like, you kind of find something and,
right,
like,
and then you double down on your mistake and be like, you can't track the boar, but you do find some deer tracks. Fuck, why did I say that? Sorry, made a joke. You think it's easier to, instead of using a dice roll as a break to think up something as a game master, because then what happens when it succeeds, then you have to follow it through, because what you're doing is, give me time to think of something, I hope it fails. Right?
Or if the dice roll is like medium, and you're like, okay, well, what is a medium amount of information to give out of the zero information that I had, and I'm making up all of it right now?
Yeah. Okay, so that was one, is like, yeah, it can give you time to think, but I think that's a fallacy, because then it actually makes more work for you.
It seems like it to me, the way you and I tend to game master, it doesn't seem like it would make things easier. I wouldn't be using that time to think. I'd be waiting for what the dice says, and then the dice gives you some
lukewarm,
some tepid water answer, like, oh, you rolled a 10. I don't know. Like, what's good? What's bad? I already didn't know. And now you're expecting me to, like, give you different versions of this, good or bad versions of what you're looking for based on how well you do, when I already didn't know the answer to, you know, when you're going to ask the question. And that's, you know, that's just like an improvisational storytelling muscle that you gotta build.
So I think the other way you can take a lesson from Fighting Fantasy, and that lesson is this: it can be a binary choice between, do I want to go down this road with the players that I didn't really plan for, or maybe I did. Maybe I do have a plan for it, because, like, you know, I put that boar in there to, like, signify that the troll is actually good for the forest, and if they run after the boar, they're gonna go down a rabbit hole.
They might learn something.
Exploring the forest and being like, actually, you know, those loggers who want me to kill the troll, they're the bad guys in the story. But, like, I'm gonna leave that up to the players. So, if that's the case. Especially if that's the case. If you have this whole, like, subplot about how the troll is actually good for the forest, why would you ever hide that behind a roll?
Yeah.
Just say, yeah, you can follow the boar. Made a great big path down the bushes, you know? Hell yeah. But if you didn't do that, and you're not quick enough to, you know, improvise that on the spot, and you do, like, okay, I didn't plan for that. That was just a little bit of flavor. My players are about to go down a path that I have no plans for. I do not know what's in the forest. Do I allow this or not? I think that's the question is, am I going to allow it?
Right.
If yes, then no roll required. Sure, you can follow the boar, and I'm going to wing it.
I like that. Or
no, you can't. The boar's gone too quickly.
It's gone. It would, you know, it ran away really fast, and it didn't leave much tracks.
Sure,
would take
you could stop
all day to try and find it. And you might not even.
You
find
could
it.
Stop all day and try to find it. I'm not even going to make you roll a perception because I'm just telling you it's gone.
Mm-hmm. That's. So it veers towards something that some people might call railroading, but I don't think, like, there's a difference between, you know, railroading where you're taking away players' choice and agency in a situation versus, like, well, no, I've, like, this is the adventure I prepared, so that's what we're going to play.
Yeah.
That's not the same thing as railroading. We've agreed to participate in this together. And in general, in my game mastering and design, I kind of lean towards stuff like that, towards binary, like, is this an option or it's just not? And there's a lot of different ways to telegraph that to the players with your narrative, with your descriptions, with, you know, getting everyone's drifts synced when they create their characters in the first place so that everyone feels like, yes, we're in agreement. That would be a waste of time. We've got a job to do, and it's this, not that. There's a lot of different ways you can keep a party pointing in the right direction as far as that goes. And then allowing just like, can I make an investigation on this? Can I do a percepti? Can I pop a percepti? When there's nothing there.
Right.
When there's no content prepared for a successful perception.
Or there's no uncertainty of if they fail.
Right. Yeah. That's the other thing. It's like, well, we want to stop here and look around. Great. I'll tell you what's there. You're telling me that you stop and spend the time to look around and see what there is to see here. Great. No role for that. Here's what there is to see.
Oh, but Game Master, I want some mushrooms for this potion I want to build, I want to make. All right. As Game Master, I'd say, yes, there's some mushrooms there, or no, this isn't the place to find some mushrooms. I don't know why. What? This is the first I've hearing of a potion. I'd love to talk more about this
potion. But stuff like that, if that is built into it, like if a character is playing some sort of herbalist, or like if you are enforcing like magical components, spell components for the use of magic in whatever game you're playing, whatever system, whatever. That I feel like is where it is appropriate to just like, okay, yeah, give me a nature check. And, you know, we never play Dungeons & Dragons, but we keep using the Dungeons & Dragons language to describe this stuff. But yeah, that's when I'd be like, well, okay, give me a nature check. Yes, you get some. You can add whatever.
Sure.
You can add some components. And it took this long. And I want to like quickly fast forward past, or not fast forward, but I don't want to dwell in that space because that's not, like, I want you to be able to do that. If that has anything to do with your character, if that has anything to do with your abilities, or if that's important to your role playing, right? I want to allow that, but I don't want to. I don't want a scene to turn into that unless there's something interesting or funny or meaningful about it.
I think, and I'm not. I haven't got you yet, but I do think that that role, calling for that role in that instance, right? If like you're playing, the spell components and stuff. That role is a. I'm afraid it's going to break the game if I just give it to the players.
Ah.
Well, okay. Because, and I think that's a very valid fear, because there are some players out there who ask and take and take and take and take and take and then throw it back in your face and be like, oh, this is really easy. And you're like, well, I gave you everything you wanted. Why would you use it that way?
So, yeah, there is an issue there of almost like a bad faith actor in the situation who would take every opportunity to be like, can I investigate? Can I nature check? Can I survival check? Can I nature check? Because I'm trying to stockpile
all this shit that's going to break an encounter later that like you were like, oh, this is going to be a really fun encounter for my players. And they're like, actually, I got the magic twig of the daisy playing. And boof, the encounter is done. And you're like, well, that was the whole session.
More what I was thinking when I came up with that example was the sort of like the travel mini game that I was running when we did our Brackenwald lock-in adventure, where there were a couple of resources that played into you guys traveling across the map. And for most of the time, you were exploring the map places you hadn't been before, and then towards the end you did a little bit of backtracking, and that was also built into the travel system that you could fast forward between places you'd already been, because I didn't want to waste time with stuff like that. But sometimes you guys would make camp and you would think like, well, how many torches do we have? We've got some, it'd be good to have a little bit more. And that's when I would be like, all right, well, you give me a roll for your camp action, which is to find some wood and make some torches. And, you know, usually it was just, did you succeed? I don't even think I ever asked for that, because you were always in a forest, so it wasn't ever hard to find wood. If you said your camp action was finding wood, I'm pretty sure I just gave you wood, right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right, spend a supply and give me a D4. That's how many torches you were able to make. And I was doing the Shadow Dark thing where a torch lasts for X amount of time, real time, a real timer that I keep as the game master. So you guys didn't want to run out of light completely in a dungeon situation.
Yeah.
But there was another mechanic. There were two mechanics kind of playing into that. Plus the third thing where nobody was being a bad faith actor. Everyone was just committed to the authentic role playing. Then the other two things were your inventory slots, where you couldn't carry a bajillion of them, so you couldn't break the game with anything because you could only carry so much of any one thing. And then the other was that, I forgot my second thing.
Didn't have to do with Brackenwald.
Yeah, it did. Well, it was just, so there were some game mechanics. There were some game mechanics standing in place of stockpiling any one thing.
Was it the like watch rolls?
Yeah. No. Oh no. It was that I only gave you guys one camp action,
because
I said that you had to divide the night into at least three watches. So everyone got a camp action, and then at least three out of the four of you had to stand a watch, during which time something could happen and negate your rest. So there was a lot of focus on, we need to be able to rest because that's how we recover. So there were a couple mechanical things that encouraged y'all to, the mechanics fed into the role play. And I guess I kind of like went back on my own point, because at no point was anyone like, hey, I'm out in the woods looking for this one really specific thing.
Yeah.
There were a couple times, I think, where did anyone ever hunt or forage? To just increase the supply a little bit.
I feel like we might have done that once.
Did someone like shoot a deer one time? And then like, you guys were okay for supplies for a couple of days. And it ended up not coming back, because then you guys got to stay somewhere.
Yeah, then we hooked up with the Fae and stuff.
And got some, you know, got a nice night of food and didn't have to spend any supplies in that overnight. But I think in those situations, I just asked for one single action roll. Like, give me a roll. Do you shoot something or not? And the game system is a binary. Do you succeed or fail? There's not, there wasn't degrees of success. And that's, I guess that's the thing. And I don't know what's going on behind Brennan Lee Mulligan's Game Master screen when he asks for, like, well, give me a nature check. Give me an investigation, you know? I don't know what's going on behind there. I don't know if he knows, but a lot of times it seems like he doesn't know the difficulty class when he asks for that check. And then he just kind of, like, is pretty good at... he's just pretty quick and pretty sharp at reading the sliding scale mm-hmm. of like between 1 and 20 plus with bonuses, how much should I give? But it always seemed like he was ready to give a lot and would just, you know, wait for the dice to clickety-clack, and then whatever that number was, he would still give
mm-hmm.
good, actionable information to his players. Because the actionable information is the more important thing yeah. than the scale of roll result.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's essentially what we're saying here. So, like, if that's the more important thing, is the roll even important? And I think we're both basically in agreement that the answer is no in most situations.
I'm glad that you said that very well. The important thing is the actionable information.
Mm-hmm.
So I think using perception and like investigation and all the percepty skills and whatever talents and whatever roles it is in whatever system you're playing, I think they should be limited to the rule of like uncertainty. Like, oh, well, I'm not even going to come up with an example that I can argue against later. So if you want your players to make good decisions, you have to give them information. I think hiding and like giving partial information or corrupted information with a bad role,
I don't
like that idea. I think you should have trust in your players to make good decisions with the information. For example, one of the examples I wanted to go through, well, say your thing and then I'll
say. Well, this is probably going to turn into somewhat of a tangent. Might be the last major tangent of this episode. Is just that, like, we haven't cracked or really ever succeeded in a good mystery session or one shot or like adventure built mm-hmm. around a like persistent mystery case. And what you said about like getting potentially like inaccurate or corrupt information, because we just talked about like the point of it is the actionable information. Mm-hmm. And so if you are using the dice results to determine how accurate versus how corrupt or inaccurate or misleading information that you give your players, like, I think it breaks the contract between the player and the game master if you ask for something like a role, or if they say, like, I do this, you know, in good faith,
mm-hmm.
and then you deliver. I think this was a huge mistake that I made when we did that Return of Castraticon Afterlife adventure, is I just like I gave you the bad guy right up front, and he's like sending you on a quest, and you have no reason to trust him, but also no way to verify whether or not he's trustworthy, and so like that wasn't a fun reveal or like even a twist. It was just like something you could not have possibly figured, because I had to conceal that information,
right?
I had to just lie and be like, yeah, this guy summoned you here and he gave you a job. And if anyone was like, oh, I suspect his motivation, I would deflect that and be like, well, you're not buying into what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I do think, and like I said, we haven't cracked this yet. We haven't ever written or run a good one of these. But a good mystery case, you know, like a police procedural, a murder investigation, whatever, does kind of rely on corrupt or unreliable, like sorting through
well, and so
information
I think,
to get to that. And so in that somewhere, the sliding scale of roll results might actually be the right answer, but we've never so managed close. To do it. And I...
So close. So I think, because, that's the thing I wanted to hit was like a mystery or like some sort of plot, you know, secret plot. Mm-hmm. Mystery is some sort of secret plot, right? You think, oh, this is going to be filled with like investigation roles. Wrong.
Yeah.
Because what that does is it puts those behind a wall, which means your players have to succeed in them. And what if they don't? Then they can't solve the mystery, yeah. and then it feels like they
Which is
are wrong.
How real life works, yeah. you know, sometimes a detective
just misses it.
Just
right?
doesn't see the correct clue or whatever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes an investigation turns up bad evidence mm-hmm. and a thing goes unsolved. But then, you know, it's their job to just go yeah. on to the next one and like, all right, well,
so I think
at
the
a certain
key...
point, it's not worth the resources anymore. And that is not satisfying narratively. Mm. It's not fun for players.
I think the key in a role-playing game is to put all the information out there and watch them put the pieces together and then make a decision on it. And I think that's hard because if you make it too hard, or it's tough, challenging, because if you make it too hard to put the pieces together, then your players are going to either try to rely on rolls, which can be spotty at best, mm-hmm. or they're not going to, like, you know, engage, or, like, you know, you're not going to highlight the right information, so they're, like, get going down the wrong path, which can be kind of fun, I guess. But then, you know, you end up with, like, the mystery half solved, and your players are like, well, I kind of had fun, but, like, I kind of feel like I boofed it, and I don't like that. Mm-hmm. So I think the key is giving good breadcrumbs, not hiding breadcrumbs behind investigation. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, right? Oh, how did this murder take place in this room? Right? Oh, there's only one exit, one entrance. How does it take place? Oh, everybody investigate the room. Roll me an investigation. Wrong. That's stupid. Shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. You should make your characters come up with theories.
We've done that before.
Yeah. This is from personal experience. Yeah. I tried to do that, and that did not work. Mm-hmm. Because, spoiler, they failed all their fucking roles. So make them come up with theories and be like, I don't know, maybe there's a secret door. Oh, if you didn't plan for there to be a secret door, I wouldn't roll one into existence. Don't be like, oh, yeah. I didn't think of that. Roll me an investigation check. Oh, you failed. There isn't a door. Or, oh, now there's a door and I don't know where it goes, right? Because that's that trap yeah. we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. But like that, it's like, oh.
Unless that's completely your style. If that's yeah, like, if that's... you know, if like Funhouse Adventures mm-hmm. where, you know, you only write a third of it as opposed to what has been our experience is we write a whole thing and only a third of it right. gets used. Yeah.
I mean, chances are your players are not going to say that because that's an extremely smart thing for a player to do, and we all know that they are mid at best. But if there is a secret door, don't, like, ask them to roll to find it. Mm-hmm. If they think there could be a secret door and say, like, oh, I don't know, is there a secret door? Then, like, you know, if you were in real life and you were like, ooh, there could be a secret door in this room, you would be pretty good at checking for a secret door.
What I... Right? Yeah, my version of that is I would be like, all right, well, yeah, there absolutely could be. We're doing like a haunted house
yeah.
one shot or mm-hmm. something. Absolutely. It is the...
So you touch everything.
It's in the genre language. So I'd be like, okay, how do you look for uh-huh. it? And if someone's like, I try all the books on the bookshelf, that probably is going to do it. If someone's like, mm-hmm. oh, I go mess with, like, I look and see, right. does any of the furniture slide? You tell me how you look for it.
And I'll tell you how you open the
door.
And
we can do away completely with the rolls.
Right. And I think that's the best way to do it because two reasons. One, it eliminates a roll that a player could fail, and then you don't get to explore the secret door, mm-hmm. which you probably
like,
really
where'd you
want
put it
to.
There? Yeah.
Right. And two,
it can still remain secret. Nobody could find it. Because what if they go in there and they look around and they're like, okay, well, it's not in this room. Maybe we come back to this room later. This is a good place sure. to hide later. Mm. And nobody thinks yeah. to look for it there.
Well, so then okay. I think that was something I was going to say later. I'll say it now. Is like if there is a secret door in that room and your players don't think to look for a secret door, don't let them stumble upon it with a roll. I don't think that's the right way, right? Because if they fail that, then they're like, okay, then there is nothing here and mm-hmm. whatever, right? But, like, have a piece of information somewhere else in the dungeon that says, you know, like, I don't know, some cryptic, but really not, right? Because remember, they're players, yeah. And also because they're not in the world, it is a lot harder for a player to solve a puzzle as a character.
You just said something that I think is more at the core of this than anything we've said so far, is that if a game master asks for one of these sort of checks,
mm-hmm.
and then the players fail that role, it really betrays the spirit of the thing we're doing together. It makes it really hard to continue to role play your character as a player who knows that, like, well, the existence of this role, and specifically the result of failure, heavily implies that something exists.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, it basically states outright, but in meta, outside of gameplay, that something exists that you didn't find. And that's problematic, because it's hard not to think about that after you know it, even though the supposed doesn't. Fiction is that the character has no idea. They don't know that they just made a roll and failed it. But now you're like, well, something. So, like, how do I behave in a way where I continue to interact with this scenario in good faith?
Mm-hmm. And it can be hard, because as a game master, always, like, for that secret door example, right? There is a secret door. Your players roll me a perception when you walk into the room. Okay, you didn't find the secret door, but they know there's something there. They're going to probably fixate on that and, like, oh, but there's a breadcrumb in this other room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go explore the other room. No, they're going to be like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to try my damnedest in this room. I'm going to try everything. And it's like, you just got to walk into the next room and, like, there's a note that says there's a secret door. But they're probably not going to do that, because they're fixated on this, you know, problem that they haven't solved but they know exists.
Yeah. Or they might, you know, in a different example, just like going through a dungeon, you know, say they come to an intersection and they make a perception roll. You're like, oh, you boofed it. Well, you don't really see anything one way or the other. Okay. But they know that there was something to find one way or the other. One of these branching paths had some information that they didn't get. And so now they're behaving potentially like more cautiously than they would have otherwise. They're not, like, they're not playing the character who they were a second ago before the role.
It changes.
Yeah.
I think that is one of the reasons why I liked this fighting fantasy idea. Like, you can't ask for extra information. Taking that and, like, okay, game masters should give all the necessary information to make a decision, for the players to make a decision. And it gets a little weird in these, you know, mystery things. So I think, like, as a player, I'm missing something, and I know I'm missing something. That's a tough thing to work around without a perception check.
Mm-hmm. And good players can handle it. Good players can do it. But I think the better practice is to just, like, run your games in such a way where that situation doesn't come up. Where the game mechanics don't allow for that weird little like discrepancy in reality to occur.
Yeah, and then did I have something else? And if I did, I've forgotten it. So I think let's do a little wrap up here.
Okay.
All right. Perception checks.
And broader than that, to include, like, All manner of, like, perception investigation, history, nature.
Perception in terms of everything a character uses to perceive the simulation. Right? So, yeah. That's, like, history, knowledge, nature, tracking, survival, whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
We agree and are putting it on the board, basically, that, like, the best practice is to run your games and endeavor with your descriptions in such a way that those sorts of roles are not necessary. And all of the actionable information mm-hmm. is given to your players up front.
Or provided when asked.
Provided when asked, yeah. Either given in the initial description of the room, space, whatever.
Right, because you can't describe every single thing in the room.
And some things are contextual to a character's, species or background. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I'm from here. Would I know anything about this? Great question. Yes. Now I'll tell you more about it. Mm-hmm. And, doing away with the chance in that situation so that nothing ends up lost and locked behind the paywall, behind the gambling mechanic, essentially, of yeah. randomness. It shouldn't be random what your characters experience.
Yeah. In terms of perception, I think to add on to that, it will take some practice to get away from that, especially if, I don't know, if you run a different style. I think we are set up to do that a little bit easier because we've kind of just been practicing it. But to get away, because it can be a little scary, and there's a little fear component in there, I think, with giving your players too much information mm-hmm. so they can break the game, right? So I think that's something that you should practice trusting your players with, of you ask a question, I'm going to answer honestly and be like, yeah, here's the situation. And your character, because they're in the world, can just get that through context, mm-hmm. right? Like, I don't need to make you do a roll for it, because it's as simple as walking into a coffee shop and being like, where's the menu, right?
Yeah.
Because we do that all the time. But right.
You just look around, and that's not really a perception check. It's you look around and there it is. And it might not always be in the same place every time or at every different right. restaurant.
Bathrooms are sometimes very hidden in restaurants, yeah. yet we seem to find them all the time.
Yeah, find them. And even the act of asking a staff member, hey, where's the bathroom? You shouldn't have to roll for that. That's just how real people go through reality.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hopefully you feel a little bit, maybe you don't feel at all different, but your brain's a little itchy, which I guess is a feeling. So maybe you do feel different. Hopefully you feel a little different.
A little different. Okay. That's going to do it, I think, for this episode of Two-Headed Game Master. As always, 2HGM.com is defunct. Head on over to Patreon, the 2HGM Patreon. That's where all our stuff is now. And pretty much everything is on a free tier. Everything's on a free tier.
Forgot. I got to deal with that because for those old faithful listeners, we are working on making it free. Patreon made it extremely difficult.
Oh, they're still getting charged?
Yeah, that's not something for the podcast to discuss.
Anyway.
You reminded me I never fixed that issue.
All of our stuff is on just the Patreon page now. All the things that we do will be in Patreon posts. That's how you can find us, participate in our Discord, hang out, see when things are happening, download any of the RPG material that we publish for free through there. It's all on Patreon now. And if you do still want to financially support us, there is a tip jar. Pretty much it. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pond Hill is Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And we'll see y'all next time.
See you next time.